Welcome to Trailblazers, where we explore the inspiring journeys of entrepreneurs and industry leaders who are redefining success and making a lasting impact. These game changers are driving progress in our region and around the world. I'm Melody Bradford, your host. Welcome to Trailblazers on WDIY 88.1 FM. Today, we're taking a ride into the world of classic cars, craftsmanship, and leadership with someone whose story is as timeless as the machines he restores. My guest is Keith Flickinger, curator and chief operating officer for the U.S. operations of the NB Center for American Automotive Heritage right here in Allentown, Pennsylvania. It's an extraordinary institution founded by Nicola Bulgari, the legendary vice chairman of the Bulgari luxury brand. Keith leads one of the most remarkable collections of mid-century American automobiles anywhere in the world, not as museum pieces, but as living, breathing works of art. Under his leadership, the NB Center doesn't just restore cars, it restores stories, legacies, and a piece of American identity itself. We're going to talk about Keith's personal and professional journey, his early influences, how he connected with Mr. Bulgari, the incredible work happening at the center, and what leadership looks like when you're managing artisans, educators, and visionaries under one roof. Keith, welcome to Trailblazers. It's a privilege to have you here.
Thank you, Melody.
Keith, take us back to the beginning. When did that spark for automobiles first ignite for you? Was there a moment maybe in your dad's garage when you knew that this was going to be more than a hobby? Can you share that with our listeners just a little bit?
Well, I mean, it really went to a whole another level when my father, he was working at Mack Trucks and he was a painter. For me, I would play with matchboxes, obviously, as a little boy. But I was always in the garage tinkering, taking something apart, putting it back together. And I think I was about 8 years old when my father left me actually spray something with a spray gun in our garage at home. And my dad always had projects going here and there for friends, relatives, whoever. And I remember when I was 12, my dad got me a toolbox, and I thought that was the best thing ever. And, you know, my whole life has been all about little journeys and little things that excited me. And I thought, well, wow, I'm finally there.
Yeah.
I have a toolbox. And, you know, and never dreamt of doing anything that I've done in my life professionally. And then my dad, you know, as he grew older and I grew older, I got into be 13, 14 years old. And I was super excited about what I was going to do and what I liked doing, but I did not know where or how I was going to, you know, attack that. And I never really connected with modern cars. I just liked vintage cars, anything from like 1903 up to maybe the 60s. I really didn't attach to modern stuff. It was vanilla to me a little bit, mm-hmm. You know, like it was just a means of getting from A to B. The vintage cars had character. Had a personality of their own.
Mm-hmm.
You could identify every single car just by looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, even in those days, you know, or even now, you know, a Ford Tempo and a Impala, and they all look alike to me.
But I
just never connected with it. And so that was the beginning of it with my father. My father is my biggest influence, and I am where I am today, you know, because of him.
So he was a major influence in your craft. What did you learn from him, not just about restoration, but about patience and precision and pride in doing things the right way?
Yeah. Well, the apple didn't fall far from the tree with me. My dad was such a perfectionist, and like he would make me do things over and over and over again until I got it exactly the way it should have been. You know, he wouldn't let me cut corners. Our family was very, like when he came home from Mack Trucks, dinner was on the table at 5 p.m., If you were not there for it, there was no dinner. And everything was very, you know, that way. He was in the service. So even down to, you know, his clothing and his dresser drawers, like white T-shirts were folded like they just are new out of the pack after they're laundered. Like my mom didn't even do them right. My dad had to have everything. I opened his drawer and it was like, oh, my God. I shut his drawer. I'm like, okay.
Don't touch anything.
And this is how – and that's how everything happened. You know, like even – like all of our tools in my toolbox had to be in line and organized and straight. You know, I couldn't just wipe them off and put them in, you know? And as a little boy, it's like, meh. But I learned pretty quick that was not acceptable if I wanted to be part of my dad back in those days, you know? And
yeah.
I didn't realize it, But, you know, when I first started my first job, it was like, wow, am I glad
you had that foundation.
Made me do that.
Yeah.
You know, it taught me.
He taught you well.
Thanks. I hope so.
Well, so before the NB Center, you ran your own restoration business here in Allentown. What did those early years of entrepreneurship teach you? I mean, we're trailblazers, right? So we talk a lot about leadership and kind of honing your craft. But what did that teach you about craftsmanship, about customers, and about building a name that Nicola Bulgari himself would one day seek out?
Yeah, I'm going to go back even a little farther for you, because I met Mr. Bulgari through pretty much my mentor. Mm. My mentor was Maurice DeAngelis. Maurice DeAngelis was a superior craftsman in the antique automotive world. He actually worked on Mr. Bernard Berman's cars. Mm. Bernie Berman owned Allentown Brake and Wheel. His brother Phil Berman was Hess's department stores.
Oh.
Maurice was a genius to me. He was like a god to me. And so when I was working at Wendling Restorations in Macungie, Pennsylvania, I was working with two brothers that were in their 80s, George and Bob Wendling. And then I had Dalton and Donald Wendling, their two sons, and then me and another young guy. Okay, I was 17 years old, and I thought I was in heaven. I mean, I'm restoring Duesenbergs and Packard dual cowls and V16 Cadillacs. And the day that set me apart there is I was restoring a 1930 Cadillac V16 touring car. And as I was taking the inner door panel off of a door, and that's back when we had Polaroid cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what that is, Melody?
I do.
Okay. And I, you know, and then I had a bag and tag. So you put the pieces in a plastic Ziploc bag.
Sure.
You mark where it's from. You take a Polaroid picture. You wait for it to develop. You're shaking it. Yep, good. Put it in a bag, because that's the only way you're going to remember how to put the stuff back together.
Right.
And I remember on the inside of the out of the door panel, on the inside of the outer panel, it said Bob Wendling in big like shoe polish. And I'm like, what is this? I find his brother. He comes over. They built the car new. They worked at Fleetwood Coachworks in Fleetwood, Pennsylvania. So now imagine, Melody, I'm working on a car that my bosses built new. That's when all of the detail went to a whole different level for me. I mean, I'm thinking, okay, this car, if this guy, I think he owned a pipeline company. What if he takes it to a show and they're going to judge it? And they're saying, oh, I don't think this is right. Oh, really? Well, let me introduce you to George and Bob Wendling. They built the car new. So it was like I got pushed off over the falls.
Yeah.
My mind went to a whole nother, you know, like a sixth gear. And there was no sixth gear. It was a four speed. And I am humming. And I just, there was no turning back.
So you developed this craft within you that, and this passion really, and you turned it into craftsmanship.
Yep.
Enter in all these cool people here regionally.
Yeah.
What happens? Now, this part of the story I love, right? It's fascinating. It fascinates everyone. How did you first come to meet Nicola Bulgari? Please don't leave anything out, because it's really a fun story.
So I left there when I was 24 at Wendling Restorations, and I started my own business. I had 511 customers at that time. I did a car for Mr. Monahan that owned Domino's Pizza. So I had good customers.
Right.
But no one with the passion like Nicola Bulgari. Mm-hmm. He's way beyond me. And I met him in 1995. I got a call from an insurance company called J.C. Taylor. And he said, we have a customer. We want to send you their 1942 Buick Woody Estate wagon. It was on an estate up in Millbrook, New York. And it went over to a neighbor's house. He drove it there, but he forgot to set the handbrake properly. Mm-hmm. And this is a standard transmission. And it popped out of gear, and it went down a ravine into oak trees.
Oh, my.
The car got sent to me from the insurance company. How did that happen? Well, Mr. Bulgari called Bernie Berman, because he was a car collector locally. Bernie said, you need to take it to this boy in Allentown with a baseball hat, a.k.a. me. But Mr. Bulgari was excited to hear that, and he hung up. So he calls Mr. Berman back, and he says, well, how do I get in touch with that guy? He says, oh, you need to call Maurice DeAngelis, a.k.a. my mentor. And he calls Mari, and he says to Mari, Mr. Berman said I'm supposed to call you to get a phone number, because I want to have my car repaired by this boy in Allentown with a baseball hat. And Mari says, oh, yes, that's Keith. He wears a baseball hat. So I get the car sent to me through J.C. Taylor. I never meet Mr. Bulger or anything. And, you know, we didn't have phones. We had no cell phones. We had no internet. I'm going through the car and I'm fixing all that's really was wrecked pretty hard. It pushed the hood back into the wood.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm trying to go through and do my best of everything I do. And I get a call from Connie Ruta in New York. And she goes, "This is Connie Ruta from Bulgari. I understand you have my boss's car there getting repairs." So I asked what kind of car was it, and she didn't know. And I said, "Well, I have 8 cars in the shop." And I said, "What's the name?" And she said, "Bulgari." And I didn't have no idea who or how to spell nothing. And so I told her to call back, you know, find out what kind of car it is. Maybe I can help her. She calls back all proud. And it's a 1948 Buick Woody Estate Wagon. I said, "Wow, that's odd." I said, "I do have one of those here, but there's only 3 left in the world." And 1942, they only built cars for 4 months because they turned all into war production. I said, "What can I do for you?" "Well, he would like to come in this Thursday. Can you work late?" Well, work late. I worked 7 days a week, you know, I mean, until 8, 9 o'clock every night. I said, "Sure." So this car pulls in. There's a driver, and there's this 6'4" guy gets out of the passenger front seat with a trench coat and blonde hair. And out of the back gets this 5'2" gentleman, black mustache, black hair. So I walked over to him. This was my first mistake. And I said, "Welcome to Allentown, Mr. Bulgari." And he says, "My name is Alfredo Mercado. I'd like to introduce you to Senor Bulgari." It's the big guy in the passenger seat. Looked like a bodyguard. Again, no internet. How do I know who anybody is? So I shake his hand. They come in. They look over the car. And when they go to lead, they thank me. And they say, "We're going to send you a list of extras Mr. Bulgari wants to have done." Okay. I had a fax machine. Well, coming through the fax machine, redo the interior, redo the engine, redo the driveline, redo the brakes, redo all the wood. Whoa, 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 whoa. Who's paying for this extra stuff?
Right.
And when and who? Why? I don't know nothing. And so I called the car that Alfredo Mercado gave me. And he says, "Don't worry. Everything will be taken care of. You know, you can, okay, fine." I work trustful. A handshake is a handshake.
Mm-hmm.
So it took another 8 months to do all the rest of the extra work. And, you know, I wasn't getting paid for that extra work. I got paid from the insurance company for the damages, but none of the extra work. So I was robbing Peter to pay Paul. You know, I'd work on this guy's car for a while. I'd work on this one, because I wasn't scheduling this in. I wasn't prepared to do, you know, these many hours of extra work on a car that I scheduled in to do this many hours. But I did it, and I called Connie Ruta when it was done and told her it was done, and she asked me, you know, if I can set up a truck to have it picked up, and she'll send the address. I said, "Sure, no problem." And, you know, I'm like, "Okay, what about the bill?" And, you know, back then, it was like $38,000.
Oh, wow.
Which was a lot of money in it, yeah, back then, of extra, that I robbed Peter to pay Paul, and I had 2 guys working with me. So, you know, I had to make payroll, and, I mean, it was a small operation. But we did a lot of cars. We pumped out work. I'll never forget. She says, "Well, can you send me your bank wiring information?" My what? I never heard of this in my life. Bank wiring information. I didn't know what that was. I got paid by check. So John Dentbrenner was the president of the bank, local bank, and I had restored a car for him. And so I called him and I asked what it was about. He says, "Oh, don't worry. We'll send it to them." So I think it was about 5 days later, I got a call from the bank and said, "Hey, Keith, we got that wire for you." And I'm like, "Yeah, what exactly does that mean again?" Like, well, here I learned that the money got wirely transferred and it's in my account and I can take it out and spend it. Well, because I was robbing Peter to pay Paul back then in that job, I had $38,000 that was like mad money. I thought, but I knew it wasn't a good thought. I thought, well, maybe I can retire.
Yeah.
Smart move I made. I bought more equipment. Didn't hear anything. Car's gone. I got paid. 3 months go by. Not good, not bad, not ugly, nothing. I thought, okay, well, in my world, I do the car for the car. I don't do it for the customer. The car deserves to be the way it was, exactly as close as possible. The owner is secondary to me, and it always has been, because that's what gives me excitement and pleasure, and that's more important than anything to me. Of course, I got to please the customer because they're paying the bill, but that's my philosophy. So 3 months go by. I get a call from Connie Ruta in New York and says, "Senor Bulgari is on the phone. Can you take the call?" I'm like, "Sure." So he's on the phone and he's apologizing. I am so sorry. I have never called you. I don't go to this place in New York, my homestead. He said, I can't believe it. Everything works on the car. It's perfection. I said, well, I'm glad. I said, that's why. He goes, yes, but I am so sorry I never called, but I have not seen it in 3 months. This is a Tuesday. He says, what are you doing Thursday? And I'm like, oh boy, here goes this Thursday thing again.
Oh boy.
And I said, well, I'm working in my shop, but he says, can you come to New York? And I said, where in New York? He says, New York, New York. And I'm, where's New York, New York? In my mind, I never said it to him, but it's like, are you stuttering? I don't know where New York, New York is. I never went to the Jersey Shore. I had no care. He says, don't worry, I'll send you a car. So he picks me up. Next morning, it's like 7 o'clock. Come around 730 Fifth Avenue in New York, and I see Bulgari on the side of this building. And I'm like, oh, shit.
The name Bulgari. Next to, I'm sure, other famous buildings.
Yeah.
Bearing similar names.
You know, I'm like across the street is another, like there's Louis Vuitton. Okay, I don't know who he is, but he's somebody. His name's on a building. I don't know what this means. So I get out of the car, and Alfredo meets me. I walk in. I sit down. Mr. Bulgari comes in. And to give you an idea of this meeting, it lasted no longer than 10 minutes.
Wow.
And I'm sitting there. And by the way, Melody, he is the most polite, gracious. He shakes your hand like I can't even explain it. It's so soft and so just gentle and a real
gentleman.
Gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he came up the right way.
Yeah.
He says how excited he was and how the car works and everything works. Everything's perfect. He says, I can't believe it. And I thanked him again. I said, well, that's great. I'm so happy for that. I really am. And he takes his glasses off and he says, can you take care of all my cars? And I'm like, how many do you have? He goes, I don't know how many I have, and they're all over the world. Nobody's taking care of them. Damn it. It's a travesty. I said, I can help you? Yes. He goes, tell me. I said, well, how about we start slow? Tell me. I didn't know what I was going to say. I was trying to buy time to think of something because, like, I'm scared to death.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in New York, which I've never been. You know, these buildings are, I get nosebleed looking up. And I said, how about we look at all the cars? And he's like, yeah. And it was like, he was like waiting for some explosion at the end. And he's like, yeah. I said, and then we see what they need. Yeah. I'm like, and we do all the mechanicals first, and then we do all the cosmetics secondary. That way, all the cars run and drive, everything will work. They'll be maintained. People will be looking at, bravo, Keith, bravo. He gets up and he walks out.
Hmm. So you get back in the black car, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Alfredo takes me around New York for the whole day.
Oh, wow.
Twin Towers, tours, dinners, lunches. Like, I was treated like a king. Car shows up back in my office at almost midnight. I get out. Car leaves. I'm standing there like, okay, what was that all about? I don't know. It's Thursday. Friday I'm working. Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Just going about my business. Almost forgot about it. Tuesday, John Dentbrenner calls me from the bank. Hey, Keith, we got a wire for you today. I'm like, oh my gosh. I said, okay, thank you. And I hung up. And I had this old machinist desk that I have had my whole life. And it's my desk. And I open the metal drawer on the right and I'm looking for the business card for Connie or Alfredo. And till I do that, my phone rings again and it's John at the bank. He goes, well, don't you want to know how much it's for? Well, I thought that Mr. Bulgari didn't know that somebody in his company or his world, now that I saw the building, paid it. The $38,000, and now he's paying it personally, and he paid me double, and I feel horrible.
Yeah.
Like, that's my mind. So I'm trying to dial in, like, hey, what, you know? And I said, yeah, it's like $38,000 maybe? He goes, no. He says, are you sitting down? I said, yeah. He says, well, somebody from Spa, Italy, wired you over $250,000 today.
Oh, my God.
Hmm. So I guess I'm supposed to be doing something, and I have no idea. No idea, Melody.
Time to catalog the cars and phase them.
I know nothing.
Wow.
I found out pretty quick, though. They're calling me, Keith, do you have a passport? What's that? I'm a Pennsylvania Dutch boy. So they got me an accelerated passport, this, that, this thing. Next thing you know, private jet, six different countries.
So real quick, because let's just talk quickly about the birth of the NB Center. The partnership took root. What was the vision and what's housed there now? What is happening there now? How is it evolving? I mean, you guys are just into a lot of cool different things. You have different buildings that house different
businesses,
stages.
Yep.
Yeah. And so talk to me a little bit about that and some of the partnerships that have grown as a result of that through with educational institutions and how that's evolving.
Yeah. So as time went on and, you know, Mr. Bulgari, his passion came with the Vatican cars. Mm. So as a young boy, you know, those were big American classic cars. And in Italy, there was not a lot of those. Mm-hmm. You know, it was all Alfa Romeo, Maserati,
right.
Fiat, but not these big, elegant cars that you could drive across America with reliability, stability, comfort. And that's what he dreamt of.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we got together, I realized what his passion was about his collecting and what he liked driving. And it's not a static collection. It's drivable. Every car is plugged into a maintained charger. Every car is licensed. Every car is insured. 200 strong right now just in Allentown that can go
wow.
anywhere with reliability, comfort. And so as we were starting to do this together, you know, we built a campus of 27 acres. And we have separate buildings for different jobs. So we have one building where we disassemble, document, and do the metal work, fabrication, and paint work. We have another building where we do just mechanical, whether it's restoration, preservation, or maintenance of the collection cars.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next building is upholstery shop. So we do all upholstery in there. We also own a gauge company, which used to be John Wolf and Company. It's a gauge repair facility that does aeronautical, boats, and automotive. Another building aside of it is a machine shop where we do all crank grinding, crank straightening, magnafluxing, cylinder head service, and complete engine rebuilds. That is open to the public now.
Mm-hmm.
And with all these entities that we're doing, now we have four other buildings with collection. We have a lodge. We have an old drive-in movie theater, which we resurrected called the Boulevard Drive-In.
Because it used to be the compound used to be the drive-in.
Exactly.
In Allentown.
In Allentown.
And literally, if you're going down, what is it, Union?
Union Boulevard.
If you sneeze, you miss it.
Yep, right when you go past Coca-Cola Park and a charter school, you look to your left, you can't miss the screen. It's the largest existing outdoor movie screen in the world. It's 60 by 100 feet, 6,000 square feet, and we have it up and running.
Mm.
And so the preservation of not just the cars, but the time of the 30s and the 40s of when America will never be repeated.
And
it's the dress, the movie, the cars, the music.
Mm-hmm.
And so this all became a new world for me, but I dove into it, and we've developed something. And now we're so far down the road. I've been doing this for 31 years for him, just his cars. I sold my company to him. I sold my buildings. And now it's in an Italian foundation, and it will live on forever. So my new job is to teach. I don't need to restore a car. I need to educate the next generations so that they have the mindset to do it the way we did it and the mindset to hand it off and find those next generations to hand it off to their next generations. And, you know, we're working with colleges. One of the biggest schools that we work with is McPherson College in Kansas.
Mm.
Yeah, Kansas. They have a four-year degree in automotive restoration.
Wow.
And we work with Pennsylvania College of Technology in Williamsport, part of Penn State. We work with Northampton Community College. We work with many of these local as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I just am so happy to have, I think there's seven individuals on our property working, and they're anywhere from ages of 20 to 28. And that gives me the best joy, and that's my next chapter.
That's incredible. Well, and one other thing is that you guys actually have a partnership with the Smithsonian, or had. Can you talk to that a bit?
Yeah, so what we've been doing in the past here is we're documenting cars for the Library of Congress with the Historic Vehicle Association. All the photography was done on our property. And so if you go into websites, you can see all these cars so that they live on forever, not just as an automotive. Like if that piece of, it's almost like taking a painting of, you know, the Mona Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's say it burned. Well, in order to have that thing documented, there's photography, there's 3D CAD imaging, all these things to preserve the history of it, not just what it is physically.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's what's in this in the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., on these cars.
Any famous cars there that listeners would recognize?
Oh,
or
yeah,
know
and they're not our cars. They come in and they get done. I mean,
anything
you know,
but movies
oh,
or
yeah.
whatever.
Oh, yeah. The Bullet Mustang, the Steve McQueen Bullet Mustang from the movie Bullet. That Bullet was in our property. This is kind of a funny one. The Ferrari that was in Ferris Bueller.
Bueller.
The Ferris Bueller.
Wow.
Ferrari was in. That was documented. I think there's 17 that are in there right now. It takes quite a while to do it with everything that has to be done. But it's really giving back to the life of what we are doing and yeah. what's important by preserving them. But there's also the point of documenting them.
Right.
For future generations, if they ever want to look it up. You know, you can go on to a website, which is their website, HVA, Historic Vehicle Association, is part of what does that. And then you can also see everything on our website at thenbcenter.com.
And I think historically also you had the car from It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, yeah.
That went
yeah.
up against it. That's
yeah,
incredible.
Yeah, we have the original Ernie taxi from It's a Wonderful Life on property. And that's preserved. That's not restored. And that goes to a lot of, we put it up in the airport for people to enjoy at the mm-hmm. Allentown Airport.
Right
for
next
the holidays.
To the Allegiant, yeah.
Right, and we also put it in America on Wheels, which is down there along the waterfront in Allentown. You know, for people and kids to watch, they play the movie. It's a lot of fun.
And then the one other kind of implement that you guys recently did was a showroom right there on site, correct? Can you just speak to that briefly?
Yeah, so we are going to be opening up very shortly our visitor center. And our service and maintenance facility for the public. One of the biggest things that we noticed is I get every person that I run into that has an antique car is looking where they can get regular service work. Like, Melody, you take your modern car to get brakes, shocks, this isn't working, your right turn signal's out, inspection, all this stuff. But there's nowhere for antique cars. And so we bought a building, which used to be an old Rayco building, right aside of our visitor center on Union Boulevard, and we are going to be opening that up to the public to help all the people and fill it with college students post-graduation for extended education after their college. And they are going to be working on these cars, and everything will still be up to our standards. So if you take a car there and you get work done and you pay, you're helping pay for the future generation of antique classic maintenance and service.
And that's what's next, I guess, for the NB Center.
That's
incredible.
That's what's next, you know? It's exciting.
If you could leave our listeners with one message about passion, purpose, and leadership, what would it be?
I remember I worked for Daniel's Cadillac for maybe 6 months and basically hated it. And I remember Gary Daniels came to me and said, you know, you're never going to make it working on antique cars. So what I would say to everybody out there, especially younger people, and I don't mean 10, 15, 20, 30-year-olds. I mean, it can be somebody in 40 years old looking for something they had a passion for and they never reached out and did it because they knew they had to make money on something else. Don't give up on dreams. Don't give up. If you feel it inside and it's burning, go for it. Because if I would have done that, who knows what I would be doing. And I could flip hamburgers at McDonald's. I'm not above it. But I stayed focused. And I followed my dream. I followed my passion. And at the end of the day, as I say to the guys in the shop, it's like, you know, I've never worked a day in my life. I get paid to do a hobby.
Do what you love.
Do what you love.
Keith, your story is a reminder that craftsmanship and leadership share the same DNA. They're both about care, vision, and purpose. From your father's workshop to a partnership with Nicola Bulgari, you've helped build something that's not just preserving cars, but preserving America's spirit of innovation and endurance. To our listeners, if you ever get the chance to see the NB Center in Allentown, you'll understand what makes it so special. It's a place where the engines of history still roar and where every restored car is really a restored story. Keith, thank you for your leadership, your artistry, and your time today. And to everyone listening, keep blazing your own trail with heart, with vision, and with a good few miles on the road. I'm Melody Bradford. This has been Trailblazers on WDIY 88.1 FM, where passion drives purpose. Mm-hmm.